This episode of Fermented Adventure the Podcast is sponsored by Brewskits, handcrafted dog treats made from spent beer grains, oats, barley, and rye. No chemical preservatives, a great source of fiber, and packed with protein. Visit brewskits.com to see the full selection of treats for your dog and your cat. Receive 15% off, no minimum purchase, on your first order by typing in lowercase FA2024 at checkout. Cheers! Hello, ladies and gentlemen, craft spirit enthusiasts, and those interested in the intoxicating world of craft distilleries, cideries, meaderies, wineries, and the occasional foray into breweries. It's Rich Shane, and welcome to Fermented Adventure, the podcast, where we bring you the fascinating people that are making the mash, fermenting, distilling, bottling, pouring, and delivering to you some of the finest libations in the world. Before we get started, here are a few housekeeping items. Thank you for bringing the podcast into wherever you are and whatever you're doing. We truly are grateful that you have chosen to listen and make us part of your day. It would mean the world to us if you left a 5-star review. This helps us climb in the rankings, and it makes it easier for others to find us. Don't hesitate to leave us your comments as well. If the podcast didn't meet your expectations, tell us why. We're always striving to improve. You can find us at fermentedadventure.com. We are on Instagram and Facebook as Fermented Adventure. Email us at fermentedadventure@gmail.com. All right, FA Nation, let's meet our guests. He's Lee Katrincic. I'm Rich Shane. This is Fermented Adventure, the podcast. Lee, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, this is great. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for making the time to speak with us. I know you're busy down at Durham Distillery making amazing things. I can't wait to try these conniption gins that you've provided us. How did Durham Distillery get started, Lee?
Yeah, so it was pretty much a passion project from me and my wife. So probably about 10, 12 years ago, we were we were always just gin fans. She got me into gin when I was a little younger. We would go to different states, try different gins. And then on an anniversary trip, kind of out of nowhere, she said, "Hey, why don't we open a gin distillery?" And, it was kind of doubtful at first. And then we started thinking about it. We both had science backgrounds. We both been gin fans. So, we just kind of went ahead with it and took a scientific approach to making gin, which at that time had not been done.
All right. You went so many different directions. I want to unpack a lot there.
Sure.
Gin for people is you either like it or you don't like it. Gin has this personality of I've had bad experiences with gin younger, but now I think with the emergence of craft, like what you're doing at your distillery, people are now appreciating gin on so much of a different scale. What was your origin to gin and why it was something you enjoyed, or was it something you enjoyed from the outset?
Yeah, so basically it was, like I said, my wife, Melissa, who's our CEO, got me into gin maybe 15 years ago. I was not a gin drinker. I was like most people and not really had an appreciation for it. But on her side of the family, like gin was their spirit of choice. You know, they were always having cocktail hours. We always like to say it. She got into gin at a very young age. Like her grandfather used to give her the olives from his gin martini, when she's 5-6 years old. So, and then also her maternal grandmother was the one who used to always tell her not to have a conniption. So that's where we got the name from, was conniption. But yeah, you're right. We have a lot of folks that came to the distillery early on who said like, "Hey, we're not gin fans." And that's kind of why we're here, is to sort of change preconceptions of gin. And for us, like taking a scientific approach, treating botanicals the way they want to be treated with our 2-step process is really makes a difference.
Do you recall early on some of those distilleries or some of the places you and Melissa travel to?
Yeah, because I mean, I have a science background. I've done distillations, but neither one of us have done any work in beverage alcohol when we opened or we got this started in 2013. So we went to a lot of conferences. We went out to Seattle to do basically a master distilling class with Big Gin out in Seattle. So that was really our first kind of experience with that. And we would go into other ACSA, ADI conferences, taking classes, things like that, helped us get things rolling.
You spoke to 2013, and you are, I would say, for Kraft, one of the innovators of gin, one of the early acceptors or producers of gin, to say that a lot of what you did at the time, there were less gin distilleries. So you pretty much ventured out and did a lot of things that nobody was doing at the time.
That's correct. Yeah. So we went into this to make gin. As you know, I'm sure you've just other distilleries, they kind of want to make everything. And, you know, we always said, like, if you make everything, you're known for nothing. You know, you got to have some type of focus. So we were passionate gin lovers. So we went into it to make gin. So we're one of very few kind of gin focused distilleries in the country. And getting back to making gin, I mentioned a two-step process. So we were the first in the country to use vacuum distillation. So we've got a couple industrial rotary evaporators here that allow us to distill delicate botanicals at room temperature, basically. So we use cucumbers in two of our gins. So we're able to distill those at room temperature without adding any heat. So, you know, if we were to put cucumbers in a pot still, obviously we got to heat those up to get the flavor out when the run's going. But this device allows us to extract all that with no heat.
You have said a couple of times you have a science background and you're using something that what you just said, I've never heard of before.
Okay.
Normally, sometimes things are being steeped like a tea, or people have different ways of introducing those botanicals into their gin. What was it about this that stood out? Or was this something you had a prior knowledge to that you said, I can do this and nobody else knows what it is?
Yeah, it's a technique that I used to use in my lab days. So I worked for pharmaceutical companies for about 20 years doing drug development. And we would use this type of device in our labs. And when we talked about when Melissa and I talked about opening a distillery, we wanted to come up with some type of advantage, I guess, or you know, something that we could say is our own. And thinking about using these type of delicate botanicals in our gin really fit perfect with this technology. So it's hard to explain, but it's a closed system. It's got this big flask on it. It holds about 5 gallons of liquid. You put the cucumbers in there, for example, with ethanol or alcohol, and then a pump runs and removes all the air from the system. And then under that reduced pressure, the ethanol is free to boil at a very, very low pressure. So again, we don't need the heat, and we distill the cucumbers at room temperature. But yeah.
Lee, when you mentioned flask and going through this whole method of how you're extracting flavor brought me back to high school science class. Mm-hmm. And all I can think of is, if you were my science teacher, mm-hmm. I think I really would have done a lot better in science, because I think what you just did was you really communicated your passion for the art of science, not just conveying and learning its science. And I think that, as you said, you were looking for an advantage. And I think that played so much into it. But I will tell you, I'd like to go back to my high school days and perhaps take a couple classes with you, because I think maybe I would have grown up at the distiller now.
Yeah, I know. It's funny. Yeah, back in those days too, it was certainly not very cool, you know, to be a scientist. And you know, now it's kind of fun that I'm kind of using that background to do some fun things making gin. So yeah.
You had the concept of how you wanted to extract flavor. How did you go about setting up the still and the equipment that you wanted to use for your distillery?
Yeah, so with gin, it's all about recipe development. So it's coming up with your recipe. So there's hundreds of different botanicals you can use to create your gin. That's what makes gin so unique. Is you know, we always say that just grabbing a bottle of gin's not. They're not all the same. It's like different wines, different wine varietals, things like that, that every gin's got something different going for it. But we spent about a year developing the gin recipe. So again, taking a scientific approach, we would distill juniper. I'd have juniper distillate by itself. Coriander, I'd have coriander distillate by itself. And we did that for about 20 to 30 botanicals. And we sat there with shot glasses and eyedroppers and back calculating the weights, working on a very small scale to start. And then when we got into the distillery, scaling that up to our pot still, and even like the vacuum still, it was sitting in my garage while we were getting the distillery going. I didn't have any way to run anything. So, we got into the distillery, got our permits, got it hooked up, and, did a lot of work to scale it up. And luckily it's worked out.
You made that sound so easy, but you're talking 13 years ago or 2013, yeah. More than 13 years, 11 yeah. years. Were there some sort of, and you're in Durham, so I don't know what the regulation is. Was it an easy conversation? Mm-hmm. Were there things that you didn't expect that they were going to mm-hmm. ask of you? And how was that just kind of that getting to opening?
Yeah, at that point too, and we opened our doors in 2015, but first of all, North Carolina spirits did not really have a good reputation at that point. So you can think about, North Carolina, it's exactly what you think, lots of moonshine, lots of sort of not so high quality stuff. So we were sort of new to the game here. It is a regulated state as far as it's a state control liquor system. So it was tough for us at the beginning because even out of the distillery, when we were picking a spot for the distillery, we wanted to be sort of downtown Durham. So we're actually right near the old Bulls ballpark where Bull Durham was filmed. But at the time with the ABC regulations in this state, we could only sell one bottle per person per year out of the distillery. So we opened it October 2015. That was the first time since Prohibition that a bottle of liquor was sold outside of a state-run ABC store.
It's not that long ago, but the mm-hmm. idea that how do you keep track of somebody that they bought one bottle in a year?
Yeah.
How does anybody keep track of that? That's just crazy to me.
I know. It was pretty nuts. And, we would give tours here. I give a tour. And then at the end of the tour, I tell them they could buy their one bottle per person. And they would all laugh at me thinking I was joking. It's like, no, I'm not joking. But, I found a device or like a service that we would just scan your license. And then if you came in within another year, would just beep at me saying, hey, I scanned this within a year, basically. But fortunate for us, the regulations loosened up. I think in 2017, it was five bottles. Then 2019, we pretty much went to whatever you could buy at a state store, you could buy from us. But again, all the sales to restaurants here are still done through the state's ABC system. So we can't sell to a restaurant.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about how the idea and the model is set up. It's not in the beginning, and I'm glad to what it is today. But it's not set up to encourage at that time.
No.
But I can only sell one bottle to one person
yes.
per year. There's no, you're a scientist. But to me, financially, that's not a successful model of starting a business.
Yeah, it was very tough to get going. I mean, just talking about finances, the craft distilling scene here was relatively new. And try to talk to a bank. It's like, hey, we need a loan to open a distillery. And they didn't know what to do with us, so there's a lot of rejection there. And especially with the stills too, you need a still to make your product. And most of these reputable manufacturers, the lead times on them are, a year to 18 months. So you're telling a bank, hey, I need a bunch of money right now, and I'm not going to have a product for a year, year and a half, because I got to, put money down on the still. So, it was a challenge. And luckily we worked through it, and the laws loosened up as well. And yeah. We're rolling now.
I'm looking at three bottles here. I've got
yes.
the Conniption American Dry, the Conniption Kinship. Try to say that 10 times fast. And the Conniption Navy Strength. By the way, whoever does the graphics and your bottles, they're just absolutely beautiful. And they're eye-catching. And on the mindset of these are going to stop people, I think, when they're going down the aisle, that's going to catch somebody's eye in the sea of what may be sold on that liquor store shelf. So these are gorgeous. Where do we start here?
Okay, so let's start with the American Dry. And yeah, thank you for the compliment on the bottles. There's been an evolution over the last 10 years of those bottles, and to have more of a shelf presence. And yeah, I think where they're at right now is pretty good. Yeah, they look really good, and we're real happy with them. We tried to find a balance too. You talk to a bunch of bartenders, the bartenders don't want to deal with squat bottles and things like that. So we tried to find a good balance between, how it's going to look for a consumer on the shelf and functionality with the industry folks. Yeah.
I popped the top on this.
Okay.
This gin's been in here a long time. And this whole area, and I'm pointing around my face and mouth, just exploded with some, like, I would look around wondering if anybody lit a candle here, but there's so much going on just from the, I guess the oxygenating of what's happening there with things escaping and things rushing in. That was delightful. That's like a first introduction. That's not a bad first date.
No, that's great. That's great. I'm glad you found that out. Yeah, it's and then this gin is our contemporary gin. So this gin is designed for all those folks we talked about who have had bad gin experiences. And we knew also opening a gin distillery down here in Moonshine Country, we had to have a gin that was very approachable. So this is a really a workhorse gin. And what's the focal point of this gin is going to be the vacuum distilled cucumber. And we also vacuum distill honeysuckle flowers. So they're going to be kind of at the forefront of this gin. The juniper is going to take a little bit of a backseat. So those can shine and really show what our technique does with the vacuum distillation.
I eat cucumbers just about every day. I just find the healthiness, the properties of them. And I'm just trying to recognize or reference in my mind, I don't get too many cucumber notes from other gins, even gins that I think that say it's a cucumber gin, or even let's say a ready-to-drink cocktail that might have cucumber in the gin. But that is beyond getting past that first experience for me, which was more of the citrus notes. I get some lemon in there, but I'm glad you pointed out those two ingredients because there is that the cucumber does shine through. It really does, as well as there's that sweetness. I almost feel like I'm biking through the trail and I love honeysuckle. And it's funny because my experience, and you can speak to this more than I can from a scientific and distiller background. But there are things that you put in here that are the botanicals that really have no, you're not going to nose it. You're not going to know what it tastes like. But what it does is it helps to amplify those other ingredients that you do want to have shine.
That's right. So for this gin, our big goal is always balance. Don't want it to be too floral, too citrusy, too piney. Just trying to find a good balance in this gin. And then again, using the vacuum distillation, we are distilling everything. A lot of cucumber gins on the market or things like that, the ones you've heard of, use extracts. So having this device allows us to go the whole nine yards and distill those botanicals.
Lee, what are some of your favorite times of the day or things that you look forward in the distillery?
Let's see, that's a good question. Yeah, I think every morning, just coming in, getting the still going, and we run those rotary evaporators too. And it's nice too, I think overall, besides the day-to-day stuff, is just seeing folks come in our tasting room and chatting them up and saying how big gin fans are. They love our gin. And it's interesting too around the holidays how we have a lot of devoted fans that will actually start bringing their family here. And it's like, oh, we love you guys. I brought so and so in to tour the distillery. And so that's always been really nice to have here.
Tasting this is a real nice journey. On the tip of the tongue, you get a lot of sweetness. And then as everything follows to mid palate to back palate, I get more of the herbaceous, maybe savory botanicals mid. And then back palate, it's really nice and spicy, peppery. And there's a wonderful linger to this that's a tingle. And is that attributed to the ABV, or is that attributed to, again, those botanicals that have a chance to just shine through with what you're making?
Yeah, so to back up a step on that, I mean, the botanicals that are in here are juniper, coriander, and cardamom. Those are our three botanicals that are we use in all our gin. So after those are angelica root, which provides nice base notes, nice almost like cedary, curry-like flavor that kind of coats your tongue. That's where you're getting that from. And we also use fresh orange peel on this gin too. So I think that has the potential as well to kind of linger there. And but I think that's where it is you've got some of that orange kind of hanging around when you swallow.
Wonderful just to sip as a gin. And I'm just wondering, in your program, where do you see or what do you like to feature this in making cocktails?
Yeah, that's a very good point you brought up too. It's okay to just sip. But we worked a long time on these gin recipes to make them almost sipping gins. Because we talked briefly about the ABC laws around here. And when people came in the distillery, that was one thing I didn't mention, is we could not make them a cocktail. I could make them a gin and tonic. So our chance to win these folks over that came to our distillery was a neat sip of gin. So we had to make sure these all finished smoothly and cleanly. And, we spent a lot of time making sure that that happened.
Brewskits, beer, grain, dog bones, brewskits, your dog will go wild. Brewskits, beer, grain, dog bones, a healthy alternative for your pup.
Brewskits are all natural and made in the USA. Visit brewskit.com. That's brewskit.com.
My experience, and I'm grateful for the education you're bringing today and, you know, going through these gins, my experience seems to be the gins that are most memorable to me, the ones that say, that's my favorite or that's my new favorite. Or normally I say, you can't have anything out of that bottle because I'm not sharing.
Yeah.
Right. Except for with Dawn. But it seems that the individual component, by introducing the individual ingredient into the gin, that seems to be, versus taking all of the botanicals and steeping them or, going through the process individually, it seems like this to me is, it's probably more time consuming, more painstaking, but I think it makes for more interesting, complex, flavorful gin.
Right. And I will say, I'll back up a step, just talking about the process, is we do put botanicals that can handle the heat, like the ones I mentioned, juniper, cardamom, coriander, go in our pot still. But what we use is a vapor infusion method. So we have a vapor tray that sits above the liquid level. So these botanicals never come in contact with the liquid, like you're talking about steeping. A lot of distilleries will do that. We played around when we were doing our initial recipe development years ago, and we found that the mouthfeel was just not as good. It was like very, very heavy when you do that steeping and distilling that way. So we have this tray, all the vapor goes up through these botanicals and grabs a flavor. And we've got a pot still distillate, and we've got several different vacuum still distillates. And all those are blended together to make these gins. And it's nice. It does. It gives us some control over it too, which is great, where, you know, cucumbers are kind of seasonal. We're fresh peeling them, fresh slicing them. Some are more intense than others. So if we do a batch and it's like, hey, this doesn't have enough cucumber flavor, you know, we're able to bump that up with the cucumber distillate. Yeah.
You mentioned mouthfeel, and I think there's a perfect balance from it being too viscous to too thin. Mm-hmm. And kudos to you for creating that, because you struck the perfect balance. And I'm thinking the cocktails, I know traditionally maybe a gin and tonic, but if you want to amplify some of those other notes by adding more cucumber, by adding more honey, you know, like a bee's knees for this, to me, I'm curious to see what the honey does with the herbs there. And, like a clover honey or some other special honeys to add to this, to play around with this.
Yeah. And you asked me earlier about applications for this gin. So what we typically do is we want to convert vodka folks over to this gin specifically, because it's not that, you know, vodka is a flavorless neutral spirit. This is not much more. It's just kind of a gentle step up from that. So we say, you know, if you're going to make any vodka drink, you're thinking of like a vodka gimlet or something, whatever, or Tom Collins, you know, use this instead of vodka. It adds a little more depth to it. Certainly, you know, you're, like you said, like you're getting on your palate there. So that's the ultimate goal for us. So it is a workhorse gin, works great, like French 75s. For the people that say they don't like gin, that's always our go-to. You know, it's got the gin, lemon juice, simple, topped with cava or prosecco or something. So that's always a winner with this gin. It really makes that cocktail work out very, very nicely.
I drink, I consume a lot of turmeric, a lot of more Indian oriented spices. And between sips there, I have a tea here. And I'll tell you what, that really plays well with those spices too. So this is fun. I can't wait to get some cocktails made from this and see what we can create. We have the Navy strength mm-hmm. and we have the kinship.
Yeah. So let's go on to the kinship next. So so the American Dry was at 44% alcohol. Kinship's at 46. Kinship is my is Melissa's recipe. So she came up with the botanicals for this. This is all done by her. And again, this gin will be more along the same lines, contemporary wise. However, so backing up to the American Dry, when I talk about the two-step process where we've got the vacuum still, we've got the pot still, about for the American Dry, about 80% of the distillate comes from the pot still. And the other 20% is in those individually distilled, you know, cucumber honeysuckle from the vacuum still, from the rotary evaporator. Kinship is more really showing what the rotary evaporator can do, because we've got about 30 to 35% of the distillate is from there. So it also has some cucumber, some honeysuckle, but we actually vacuum distill lemon and orange as well. So it's really almost, it's got a very juicy flavor to it.
Pardon the interruption. Thank you so much for listening to Fermented Adventure, the podcast. Could you do us a favor? Hit that follow button. It makes it easier for others to find us, and it helps us climb in the rankings. Take a screenshot of the podcast, post it, tag us, and let everyone know that you listen to the Fermented Adventure podcast. Now, back to our podcast. So all right. Well, we haven't really talked about one component that I think makes this visually special, and that's the butterfly pea flower. And it's such an attractive color. It almost takes on different components of blue and purple. And the you said Melissa created this. What was the idea? Because it seems as though butterfly pea flower is certainly making its way into the spirits world. I know we've had Absinthia Vermut, who does a blue absinthe with the butterfly pea flower. What was it to introduce this into your gin?
Yeah, and again, it is an original recipe. You know, it's different from the American, but we had always wanted to do a butterfly pea flower gin. However, it was the on the grass list, a generally regarded, recognized as safe list for us to use as a botanical. So maybe 2-3 years ago, the FDA finally approved this for use in our country to be able to put in our gin. So obviously we got to let the government know what we're putting in these products before they hit the shelves. But so we decided to go ahead and use that. And as you know, like you talk about the different colors, there's a pH response to this gin. So when you add citrus or a tonic water, it's going to go from a purple to like more of a pinkish color. So and actually there's some, we've played around too. You can actually get a pH response the other way. If you bump the pH up with some different methods, you can get, it turns from a blue to even a light green going the other direction. So it's fun to play with, and it's not just a pretty gin. Melissa spent a long time working on this recipe as well. So it is, it is going to be a gin for gin fans.
I think one of the things for me nosing this and tasting it right away is you can tell the difference between the ABVs, the proof from your first American Dry to this. And I think what it does is it punches up some of those spicy notes to this. But what I find is the oils, you mentioned lemon peel and orange peel, and those oils seem to be coating my tongue more than the other gin that we just tried. Again, changing the experience, which is really fun. I'm curious, in your tasting room or the experience with your customers, there's no flavor that the butterfly pea flower adds. Right. It's a coloring, but I wonder if people start to, you know, bring about flavors that might have like a blueberry essence or a plum or something that attracts them to a purple that they're saying, oh, I taste that now.
Yes, right. That's a very good point. And you know, we're fortunate it is a really solid gin. And you mentioned the ABV too. And just a general note on the ABV, that's why the American Dry is at 44%. This is 46%. You know, us being martini fans, you know, we know gins that are at 40%, they get very watered down when you're trying to make a martini. So for us, I don't take people seriously that are putting out a gin that's at 40%. You know, you need to have that punch that holds up in a lot of cocktails.
Have you made a martini out of this specific gin yet?
Mm-hmm.
And do you use the dry vermouth or the sweet vermouth?
We use a dry vermouth. We actually, the laws have loosened up here that we were able to open a bar downstairs. We've had a cocktail bar that we serve a frozen martini. We keep it in the freezer. It's a nod to Duke's Bar in London. I don't know if you've been there, but they do frozen martinis basically. But yeah, we use dry vermouth and you know, just to your preference there, little or a lot, you know, little or 50-50, yeah, whatever.
All right, you have a lot of things. You said you and Melissa, you're creating stuff all the time. We have the three gins here. We'll work to try the Navy Strength shortly, but talk about some of the other spirits, the other expressions that you are creating.
Sure. So we have one other gin. It's seasonal. We do a barrel rested or barrel aged gin every October. We release it. We age a variation of our Navy Strength recipe in bourbon barrels from High West Whiskey, and we release that every October, and that's been very popular. You know, it's sold out already, I guess, for this year. But our other products.
You cannot get a bottle in 2024 of your barrel aged gin.
Yeah, I got a few left here, but that's about it. But they'll be coming out again in October. We've bumped up production to, you know, produce a little more. So
listen to you people in North Carolina, you're hoarding the good stuff, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. I know it's tough. We make other products here. So when we opened in 2015, we knew that, okay, we talk about converting gin fans, but there's going to be folks that they don't want gin. So we decided to take a similar approach to liqueurs. So we do a coffee liqueur, a mocha liqueur, and a chocolate liqueur. It's the same type of thing. You know, the most popular coffee liqueur on the market, super sweet. Not much coffee flavor to think of. So we work with so for us, we thought, hey, we can do better than that. So we work with a local coffee company here, Slingshot Coffee, and we use a cold brew and we lightly sweeten it with orange blossom honey and molasses. So the coffee still stays the hero in the liqueur. Chocolate, same thing. The most popular chocolate liqueur in the market doesn't have any real chocolate in it anymore. We go and we melt down bricks of chocolate here and get that into that bottle. So we're trying to produce, you know, a superior craft product. We work with a local chocolate company, Videri Chocolate in Raleigh. Those have gone really well and sold really well, especially during the holidays.
Now there's also, I saw something on your website, something with honey.
Let's see. But yeah, we've got a spiced honey liqueur.
And so how do you pronounce that?
It's Krupnikus or Krupnikus, I think. Either way is probably okay. We have a colleague. We didn't initially make this. We have a colleague who actually started before us. He opened his doors maybe in 2014, but we've got to know him over the years. His name's Rim. And he just wanted to kind of get out of the business here. He was taking a different turn in life and he wanted to keep his product alive. So he approached us about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, and said, hey, will you keep making this product for me? And, you know, he just wanted his product to live on. And we thought it'd be a neat addition. And we've always loved the product. We thought it'd be a neat addition to our portfolio. And it worked out for us too, that his head brewer, if you will, or you know, production person, Michelle, came over to work with us and brought all the techniques. We got the equipment, got everything, and we've been making it for about 9 months now. So, but it's basically, this bottle is it's basically one third organic wildflower honey, one third of a spice mixture. There's probably 15 different spices in here. And the other third is ethanol. So it's a 40% alcohol. It is like Christmas in a bottle, basically.
It reminds me in a way, and not the same properties, of what we have up here in coal country called Boilo, a very spicy, warming liqueur that, you know, people would drink after a cold day of working in the coal area or out hunting. And is that, you said you've had somebody introduce this to you. Is this something more indigenous to the area in North Carolina that you're at, or just something that has a curiosity and wanted to distill?
It's got its roots in from Lithuania. So there are pockets of people kind of all over the country that like this stuff. You know, when I'm talking to Rem, who came up with this product, over there, everyone's kind of got their own recipe for it. But over here, there's just pockets of folks that love this stuff. So we're on bar cart now, so you can get our spirits. But, you know, we'll see different people ordering from all over the place,
I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was going to be my next question. How can people get a hold of some of these wonderful spirits if they're not traveling to Durham, North Carolina anytime soon?
Right. And I think if you you can start on our website, durhamdistillery.com, and it'll redirect you to where you need to go. You just click on our spirits and it'll get you to bar cart to buy. And actually, it may just be a seamless thing. You can just order on our website. But that's pretty much the way to do it. We are in about, we have about 8 or 9 key states now. We're in Georgia, Florida, New York City, New Jersey. So we can be found in Nashville as well, in different liquor stores and such there.
We are on, or I'm on, to the Navy Strength.
Okay.
You may want to join me. I don't know. That'll be weird.
I'll join you.
Talk about the Navy Strength gin that you produce.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So just in general, just backing up a step, talking about Navy Strength gins. It is an original recipe. So a lot of, there are several distilleries maybe have a Navy Strength gin, and it's the same recipe as their flagship gin. So what they do is just put less water in it, to make it a Navy. But what we did is we came up with an original recipe. You know, we were talking about these other two gins, how approachable and sort of contemporary they are. Well, the Navy Strength is going to be the juniper forward gin, like the gin that is for gin lovers, gin aficionados. And for us, this has really put us on the map as a distillery. When we talk about moments that I sort of remember in our 10 years here, the Navy Strength, we sent it to the Beverage Tasting Institute back in 2016, and it got a 96 out of 100. So at that time, there were only two gins higher than us in the world with the Beverage Tasting Institute. And it also got double gold in San Francisco. So it's very, very well regarded, which has been great. Now just talking about the tasting notes. So when we talk about the botanicals that are in the Navy Strength, these are going to be more savory. You know, we talked a lot about citrus and floral and things like that in the others, but the Navy is going to have the juniper, cardamom, coriander, and it's going to have bay leaves, rosemary, and it's going to have fresh lemon peel in there, and it's rounded out by caraway. So like those notes of sort of rye bread.
You're singing my tune, Lee. Yeah. I mean, these are so different. And I love the way, as you pointed out, you don't just take your base gin, take some water in, water out, up the proof, lower the proof. You really treat these as their own individual children and give them their own personality. You've really thought through. You and Melissa are very mindful of how you want your fans, your consumers, to really enjoy your gins and see that there's so much of a different opportunity here.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, there are folks that, they love the Navy Strength, but maybe they're not big fans of the America, because they love the flavor profile you get from the Navy. And I will say, you know, it's 57% alcohol, so it's pretty potent, but that having the 57% alcohol is not just because it's more alcohol. It's basically, scientifically, it allows me to really intensify the flavors in that gin. So I can add a lot more botanicals, a lot more flavor in there, and the gin's going to be do just fine. It really kind of help mask, or not so much mask, but the ABV a little bit. What I like to say is, if I were to put this, the amount of intensity you get off this Navy strength botanically, if I put that much intensity into like the American dry recipe at 44% alcohol, the gin would be cloudy, because the gin could literally not hold all those botanical oils. Whereas the Navy, having that bumped up ABV, really allows for that. And the Navy strength really works well in these in classic gin cocktails. I'm a big Negroni fan. Negronis were my favorite. So this will hold up to the Campari. You can still taste the gin in there, or like a Last Word that has chartreuse in it. You know, it's gonna stand out in those cocktails and make them better.
Well, we are big fans of the Last Word, so we can't wait to make that cocktail. What I got from this was, I'm glad you pointed out the bay leaf, because I got the bay leaf, and I also get a lot of spiciness, the savoriness. And I don't know if anybody said this to you, but I get butter.
Mm, interesting. Yeah.
I get salted butter.
Yeah. Everyone's got their own palate. I know it's, you know, I've heard people say they taste the cucumber in there. There's no cucumber, but it is interesting what you get on your palate, but part of the reason we're talking about savory notes is, you know, bay leaves, rosemary are things that are juniper adjacent. So it helps play up the juniper, because they are, you know, if you look up a recipe, you have a recipe that has juniper in it and you don't have any juniper at home. If you go online and look up, what should I put in there if I don't have juniper, it's going to be bay leaves and rosemary.
What I can share with you is, I don't, you know, again, I think a lot of people, they shy away from gin because they don't like juniper. And I think a lot of the idea of not liking juniper is just having an overconsumption of gin in their past. So they equate juniper with, I don't like the way gin tastes. I don't really, out of the three expressions we try, I know juniper has to be there.
Right.
But it is not the overwhelming flavoring or item, mm-hmm, ingredient that I taste. It's not there. It's there, but it's not there.
Exactly, right. And that's what we talk about. You know, we have the American dry gin. So the American dry is sort of, it's a little bit of a misnomer. It just means like not a London dry. London dry, where the juniper is going to be very forward. The American dry is also known as Western or contemporary, something where the juniper takes a backseat to other botanicals. But like I said, for us, it's always all about balance and complexity. So we want to have a very balanced gin where not one note's going to really stand out to you, but you'll get a layering of flavors.
You spoke to the awards that this Navy Strength Conniption has won. What have been some of those other aha moments for you and Melissa to say, wow, this, we're on this, you know, we travel around, we try gin, we learn how to try it, we've got these methods, but what has been some of that feedback to say, you know what, we made the right choice, this is why we're doing this?
Yeah, I think that's it is, you know, we saw how much people liked our product, and I think also being in this area, Durham is a very, very foodie town. So we have a lot of great restaurants here, a lot of really good establishments, even when we opened in 2015. And it was like, okay, we've got to make a quality product, because these restaurants aren't going to carry us just because we're local. So I think for us, we start seeing our product on the bars, we start getting some pickup. The awards, I think, things like that, because, you know, there were a lot of challenges, like we talked about at the beginning, like, well, is this really worth it? You know, we're fighting with liquor laws, and we're fighting with trying to sell more than one bottle a person a year. So, getting some of these awards were pretty, pretty big. Also for us, too, in 2019, Constellation Brands, who owns Modelo, Corona, they came in as a minority investor for their ventures group. So they picked us as, you know, they would like to grow us into a national brand to be their white space in gin. So I think that was a big moment for us too. I had worked my day job for 4 years, and Melissa and I really took no salary out of this business for 4 or 5 years. So that kind of gave us the bump we need to get things rolling here. And it's been a good relationship. And I think we're moving pretty smoothly now.
We just had Chris Bauer of Edelrein Distillery on, and he talked about sourcing some of those botanicals, those herbs and things. How do you, are some of them local to where you are in Durham? How do you go about sourcing some of those perfect ingredients for your gin?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, with the cucumbers, we'll try to use local farmers when we can. But everything else is kind of like, it's like a regionality to it. So like the juniper, whenever we did our master gin distilling class up in Seattle, you know, at Big Gin, and I was thinking, okay, these guys probably have to be foraging for the juniper, buying local juniper, things like that, especially up in that region. But no, they were buying it from Bulgaria or Albania. So over there north of Greece, there's like forests of juniper. So we buy from there. It tastes a lot better than like getting like a local cedar. You know, you don't want it to just be, it tastes like Pine Sol or something like that. You want to find a good gin or good juniper. It has other notes in there. And I will say too, you know, we use fresh orange peel, we use fresh lemon peel. There could be variability in that. Like rosemary, the rosemary that's in the Navy strength is just a dried rosemary. You know, I have rosemary in my garden, but it tastes different now than it does in January, you know. So there's things like that for consistency. So the goal of the gin distiller is to make a consistent product over time. So for this bottle of American Dry you have here, I would like you, if you would buy it in a year from now, it tastes the same, you know. So for us, it's that type of goal. Yeah,
you know, you make it a really great point. And I think a lot of times craft, and I appreciate this too, that they want to be that farm to bottle to glass distillery. And in some cases, breweries and cideries, meaderies, they want things to come so local. But I think one of the aspects that I have from our conversation is that you're a caretaker of that flavor. You're a caretaker of that ingredient. Yep. You spoke to the fact, look, Durham is a foodie town. And if they're paying so much attention to the ingredients and flavor profile, you want to match that, or you want to stand out in the same way. So yeah, the idea is there are probably a lot of sources for juniper or some other ingredients that might be in your backyard, but might not be, you know, you could form a rock band, Lee, but do you want to have a really good bassist or do you want to have a great bassist? So I think that's, you know, sourcing ingredients sometimes, maybe you give up or you might make concessions for flavor versus the idea of we're a local farm or local sourcing distillery. Yeah. Neither of them is right or wrong, but your personality really shines. Your craft, your attention, that caretaking spirit of the ingredients really shines with these gins.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I think that's a good way to put it, is we're a caretaker of the product and, you know, want to keep up that consistency.
Everybody, I'm sure, is asking you, because you do things very well. If this is any indication, I can't wait to try those liqueurs, that honey spicy bottle. And I tried to pronounce it.
Kropnikus.
Are there any things either mulling around for you and Melissa that are on the, you know, on the horizon that people can look forward to as well?
I think we're gonna try to play around with some seasonal releases. I don't know about this year, aside from our barrel age, you know, that's gonna be pretty consistent to come out every year in October. And we had talked about doing a different series, maybe not using bourbon barrels, but maybe trying some wine barrels or, you know, scotch or something. But we would also like to do some, you know, seasonality as far as the gin, maybe coming out with a gin that's better in the spring, or, you know, a release that would be something like that. But right now we're just kind of continuing to try to grow the three SKUs that you kind of have there. And we're launching in a fair amount of markets, and it's just kind of pedal to the metal on making these gins.
You certainly mentioned these wine barrel ideas, and I'm thinking, wow, I wonder how this would go with a fortified wine and the sugars and what is in that barrel that would play along with this gin. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, right. Especially you're talking about use a vermouth or something, like some type of barrel that was had vermouth in. It'd be great. Yeah.
Lee, is there anything we haven't spoken about today? Anything you want the listeners to know more about you or more about Conniption?
No, I think this is good. Like I said, you can just visit our website if you want to grab a bottle on bar cart, or if you're, I think even on our website we have where you can find us if you're local to certain areas. We've been fortunate enough too. A big thing for us is we have we're gonna have a spot in our airport at RDU, Raleigh-Durham Airport. We're gonna have conniption cocktails and cuisine, and that's gonna be opening up probably end of this year. And so yeah, if you're flying through here, keep an eye out. And, yeah.
Really exciting. Look, go to Bar Cart. Don't just buy one bottle, buy one of each bottle, and then you can have your own experience of trying these amazing gins. I will tell you, thank you so much, Lee, for being a friend of Fermented Adventure. Thanks for your time
Oh yeah,
today.
thanks. Yeah, thank you
This
for
has
having me,
been a
Rich.
treat. And I'm going back to my science teachers back in high school, and I'm going to say, hey, try these gins and then maybe try to teach science in a way that gets people excited to make gins like this. You've really impacted that. So thank you.
Great. All right. Thanks, Rich.
Thanks, Lee.